From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Idaho Matters. In part three of our Mustang series, Ashley Ahern looks at the complicated relationship between ranchers and wild horses. And she faces some challenges with her own adopted Mustang, Boo. This series for the Mountain West News Bureau is adapted from her podcast, Mustang.
I remember the first time my Mustang, Boo, bucked me off. We were riding along through the sagebrush, following a cowboy friend of mine, Dave Johnston, and I wouldn't let Boo put his head down to munch the spring grass, so he threw a temper tantrum. I stayed on for maybe four or five good bucks, but then he dumped me. Dave watched it all happen. He was a champion bronc and bull rider in Alaska in his day, so he's ridden his fair share of bucks.
He was being a turd, but, you know, he was actually, for a horse, a Mustang you got a year ago, I couldn't believe you were even on, I couldn't even believe you were on his back. But after about 4 or 5 seconds, I seen you turn your head and look at the ground, I'm like, oh, that's where she's going. Because that's what happens. If you start looking for a spot, you're going to find it.
Training a wild horse is not for the faint of heart. Boo's bitten me, kicked me, you name it. We're both trying to figure one another out. And some days, it feels like one long battle of the wills. I'm not the only one with Mustang trouble these days. For many ranchers, especially in the more arid parts of the West, wild horses are a problem. Ranchers say the horses destroy fencing and water infrastructure and compete with their cows for grass. I went for a drive with Will DeLong on his grazing allotment outside of Winnemucca in northern Nevada. In recent years, DeLong has chosen to keep his cows off the range he leases because there's not enough for them to eat out there. The horses have grazed it down.
You know, I take pride in my cattle being in good shape, and I don't want them starving somewhere. Because it won't make me any money, and it won't do the cattle any good.
Instead of turning his cows out, DeLong ended up buying hay and feeding them at home, and hay prices have been really high. But unlike some of the ranchers I've spoken with, DeLong doesn't want wild horses gone. In fact, his family's history is entwined with them. The DeLongs go back 5 generations in this part of the world. His great-great-grandmother supplied horses to the U.S. Cavalry as part of what was called the Cavalry Remount Program. The government paid her and other Western ranchers to keep horses at the ready for the next military campaign. As we drive along, DeLong points to a canyon in the distance.
There's about 2 different horse traps on there.
Horse traps?
Yeah. You'll be going through the juniper trees and stuff, and you'll be in this trap before you even realize it.
In the early 1900s, Will's great-grandfather would chase wild horses into those hidden traps on horseback and then catch them and sell them in town for money. Long before the Bureau of Land Management took over wild horse management in the 70s, DeLong's family was managing the horses that lived on the range around their ranch. They kept the numbers in check, culling the herd now and then, catching some horses to train and ride, but also releasing their own good mares and stallions intentionally to influence the bloodlines of the wild stock. It was sort of a permeable genetic barrier between wild and domestic.
They managed the horses so that they were better horses all the time. They wanted to have the best horses they could on the range.
DeLong says that now, when his dad talks about the wild horses around here, it's with a note of disappointment. He says the BLM doesn't manage the herds as aggressively or proactively as his family has over the years.
He still feels that pride and ownership on them, that it should be a prettier, better bunch of horses.
DeLong speaks fondly about the Mustangs his family has trained and ridden over the generations. His father had a beautiful buckskin Mustang named Gypsy. A lot of the horses on the ranch today are her descendants. He hopes there are always Mustangs on the range, even if they do compete with his cattle.
If they're managed in the right numbers, we're used to them. Right? I mean, I kind of like seeing them, actually.
Cool.
I'm Ashley Ahern for the Mountain West News Bureau.
And in the last part of our series, Ashley meets an Indigenous woman working to save reservation horses from being sold for slaughter. And Ashley has a breakthrough with her own adopted Mustang, Boo. And again, this series for the Mountain West News Bureau has been adapted from her podcast, Mustang.
Allison Burke has 4 Mustangs at her place on the reservation of the Spokane Tribe of Indians in northeastern Washington. All four of them are from Native American reservations across the Northwest. She introduces me to Jack first. He's white with brown spots, an Appaloosa. When she got him, he'd been abused and didn't trust people.
He's a fighter. I have scars on me from him biting and just me being in too close of proximity.
Burke's been working with Jack for about a year.
And now he's to the point where he'll do whatever. And he loves attention, he loves hugs and scratches, and he's really come a long way, but it took a while to get there.
More than 80,000 wild horses live on federal land in the West, but thousands more live on reservations. Many indigenous nations keep and manage herds on their lands, as they have for generations. The Spokane and other nations used horses to cover more ground for trade and to hunt and forage. They would ride them into the rivers and catch fish from their backs. Horses also helped indigenous nations in this region fight back against the colonizers, who began arriving in waves in the mid-1800s.
Yeah, so we had our ancestors bred horses for stamina, speed, as well as the ability to be able to carry a mother and their child.
Today, though, too many horses could outcompete the deer and elk that tribal members hunt and damage the plants and medicines they harvest from their lands. As sovereign nations, tribes are free to decide how many horses they want and how to hit that target. The Spokane try to keep their herd size to between 200 and 250 horses. When that number bumps up to 400 or so, tribal members are encouraged to do roundups, usually on horseback. Then they can either keep the wild horses or sell them, and that could be to slaughter. Burke told me that over the years, many have been shipped to Canada, where it's still legal to slaughter horses.
How does that make you feel?
Angry. Very angry. Because without the horse, we wouldn't have a tribe. So what are you doing to our horses?
Burke sees this as an indication of a broken relationship and a disrespect to the hundreds of years of shared history between her people and their horses. Reconnecting with horses has actually helped her reconnect with her own cultural heritage. Burke didn't grow up on the Spokane Reservation. She learned to ride in the English style, wearing breeches and a helmet. Not long ago, she moved back to the reservation and has made it her mission to work with the horses here, like Jack.
Thanks to Jack, I have learned a lot more about my ancestors and the way that they used the horse and how they valued the horse.
Burke has started a nonprofit called Spokane Equines in Transition to help train and rehome horses that are rounded up on the reservation. She's found a woman to adopt Jack. It will be hard to see him go, she says, but she hopes that many horses follow in Jack's hoofprints into loving homes.
It is definitely a partnership, and the more time I spend with him, the more I see him not just as a horse, but as my friend, as my relative. And I'm gonna start crying. But I know that if he stays here, that's one less horse I can help, right? Because he's taking up that space.
In his own way, my Mustang, Boo, has taught me so much about the potential partnerships that can happen between humans and horses. I've had him a little over a year now, and in that time, he's finally come to trust me.
That's the sound of a sleeping baby Mustang who is snoozing quietly with his head in my lap. And it's the most beautiful gift to be trusted like that. I don't take it lightly, boo-boo. I love you, baby horse. Good boy.
I'm Ashley Ahern for the Mountain West News Bureau.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
Did you know you are physically adapting to all your swiping, scrolling, and tapping?
We're changing our bodies and what they're able to do through our habits.
NPR's Body Electric, a special interactive series investigating how to fix the relationship between our tech and our health. Listen in the TED Radio Hour feed wherever you get your podcasts.